Hello, everybody. Can you hear that silence? That silence is the absence of Will Menaker and Virgil Texas, who are moving in together because they're married. Gotcha. You're not here to rebut that. We have today me, Felix Biederman, Matt Chrisman.
Hi.
And Amber Ailey Frost.
Yep. It's a weird permutation.
We've never done this permutation.
Yeah. Anything could happen.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for this permutation. Honestly, I was up till 6:30 a.m. last night. I was playing duos with Andrew because I didn't get a single win, and I had to stay up till I got a win. And you know what they say, sometimes it's not your night, your week, or even your year. But I've got a new white wrap to start us off to get us in the mindset.
We're ready.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
This is how a white backpack rapper would rap about, he would incorporate Fortnite into his music. My girl got knockers like it's fork knife. My blade is halal, call it a pork knife. Swimming with Nassim Taleb, call it my black swan dive. All right, we're ready?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm pumped up now.
That's right.
Get ready. It works.
Yeah. Get ready for this fucking podcast Hindenburg that's about to explode all over your eardrums because we have no idea how this is going to work. Hi, everybody. Fuck. Well, none of us know how to do this.
Oh,
Will
man,
is our
it's
dad.
So much harder than it looks.
We are
fat chocolate smeared children, yeah. And he is our stern father, who keeps us on the path by being disciplined and reading us Struwelpeter and scaring us.
Yeah. By the way, it's utterly sexist to say that I ever keep anyone in line. By the way.
No.
No, you are just another one of the grubby urchins running around Will's feet.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it's not urchins. I like to think of it as like Will is our stern younker father.
Yes.
And we have a Bavarian mom, so we're naturally like little chocolate boys. And our dad's in the Franco-Prussian War.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Where is Papa? Can I have more sweets? Oh, Papa is gone.
And he's like, I can't wait to send you to artillery school.
Yeah. We're all ooters, but also with like weird bad habits like pyromania mixed in.
Yeah. Yeah, we're like Ralph Wiggum and Uter. We're fused together in the Brundle fly machine.
The duality of Krauts. That's the title of today's episode. Man, it's like fucking amazing. It's not even just fucking amazing that we have like a show that's successful. It's amazing that like, you know, I haven't burned down the building I live in.
Yeah.
I'm like my identity stolen every day.
You're like one of those people that burns himself to death like by putting down a cigarette.
Yeah.
I honestly,
damn, thought it would go out. Sucks. I'm dead now.
Honestly, I'm shocked that you lived for a year in that Rockabilly building without doing a Chris Benoit on everyone else who lived there.
Well, they didn't have a fitness room. They sort of planned ahead for me. That would be so inconvenient, just dragging them down in the elevator that didn't work in that building to the Bowflex. Oh, my God. Can you imagine logistics? I mean, it's not surprising. I would have given up. Giving up's one of my favorite things.
Dude.
They'd be like, massacre started, never completed.
No, giving up is insanely underrated.
I love
it.
Giving up rules.
There are a lot of things that, you know, you get even less than halfway through and you're like, this is a bad idea. And yet the kind of American mindset is like, no, you will get the white whale.
Yeah, dig
it's
up,
completely
stupid.
Idiotic.
Yeah, don't do that.
You should quit certain things.
Well, I've literally done this where I quit something so early, I quit it quitting, and I see the task through. I just, like, mistimed my quit. That's what happened with the Metal Gear stream. Like, the audio didn't work, and I was immediately after, I was like, fuck this, we're never gonna fucking do this, this will never fucking work. But I had quit so early that I was like, fuck quitting, I'm gonna see this through, and then it worked.
It would have been more work to slow the momentum.
Exactly. So that's like to any athletes out there. Remember what Coach Taylor in Friday Night Lights said? What did he say? He said, every man will have a fight in his life. He'll have a fight that he loses. But what's important is that he doesn't lose himself. So we're going to lose this episode, but we're not going to lose ourselves.
No, we're going to go down guns blazing. Absolutely. It's a noble death, a martyr's death.
Yeah. I'm going to be like Slim Pickens on the back of a nuke.
Hell yes. Okay, so because Will's not here, we have very little prepared. We didn't really think about this at all. We're not planners. No, we just show up. But we do have a few subjects to talk about this week before we put this out here and hope that the show still goes afterwards. And today we wanted to wish a few people congratulations. I think that's maybe the theme for this week's show is just congratulating a few of our favorite people. and institutions in this country for the great job they're doing. Three in mind, the first being Tim Cook and Apple, which this week became the first company in history to have a market valuation of $1 trillion.
It's difficult to overstate how much money that is. It's like when you go to see the Grand Canyon, except it's instead of being overwhelmed by the scope and the beauty of it, it's just a giant pile of evil. It's really difficult to fathom $1 trillion.
Yeah, it's like one of those ancient ziggurats made of human corpses. It's astounding.
It's 2,000 times 1 billion. That's a little math for you.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Is that true, or did you just make that up?
No, dude, that's true. Wow. I was in the advanced math.
That's nuts.
But yeah, no, it's an insane amount of money. And Amber, as you pointed out,
they hide it all in Ireland.
Well, also, who is the company started by?
The company was started by someone who tried to stop the rapidly dividing cells in his body from suicide bombing his life by douching with Capri Suns. It's completely baffling that people aren't constantly talking about how stupid this man was.
It's sort of noble because Steve Jobs, like, you imagine that, like, he was at Bohemian Grove and they were like, we have like 7 infant spines we can give you.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm putting cucumbers over my eyes. I am fine.
Yeah, that we aren't always talking about how stupid and insane, incredibly rich, so-called visionaries on is. I mean, I think it's kind of a reflection of our simpering piety in some ways.
I think it's sort of a throwback. I think it's very feudal. I mean, who is the Chinese emperor who thought if he took small doses of mercury every day, it would make him immortal?
Oh, yeah. That was Sun Tzu Machiavelli.
Of course. He wrote the book Outer War. This is the first sci-fi novella.
And I was talking about this last night with Angela, and she's like, you know, they pay like 0.002% of a tax in Ireland because they hide it all in like shell companies in Ireland. Because Ireland, like, it skipped industrialization. It went from sheep and bog to Silicon Valley with nothing in the middle.
Yeah, no factories.
And they like their liberal class loves it too. And they're like, we're modern as they're getting just fucking fucked by tech.
And the second
we're like a real European country now. It's like, you fucking losers, kill them. Kill them and take their money.
And the last financial crisis, it just fucking hosed them because it was only they turned it into their only big industry, like as a tax shelter and like secondary great financial city outside of London. And after that, they're like, well, this can literally never happen again.
Yeah.
Let's just rely on it even more.
They have one of those tax policies that usually only like formerly colonized Caribbean island nations with like 30 people on them have.
Well, that's
where they sell passports. Where they sell passports to like pickup artists so that they can hide their bank accounts.
I mean, I know, you know, they're easy to make fun of and all, and they're white and such, but they were colonially oppressed. They are basically the same as those Caribbean nations. They were taken over by the British and gutted and destroyed, and now they're just trying to rub a few bucks together using the financial sector as their kindling.
It is fascinating. It is legitimately fascinating how much liberals are vulnerable to insecurities. Like, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, backlash against, like, tech exploitation among the Irish who actually have, I think, better class politics generally than Americans. But their liberals are just so obsessed with, like, being a modern country. They've completely internalized, I guess, what the English thought of them was just, like, a bunch of, like, bog people that were, like, civilized slightly by the Catholic Church.
Well, I blame Angela's Ashes, because if anyone remembers that book, it was an Oprah pick.
No one remembers that book.
Everyone remembers that book. I would hope so. It was a huge, huge hit.
Well, we're not all Oprah watchers like you.
It was the biggest book in America for a while, and it was just about these soot-smeared orphans in Limerick dying of pellagra or whatever, and it was, I think a lot of the Irish people were like, no, we're not going to let that happen. We're going to turn this place into a tech haven, and then they're not going to be laughing at us when we all have, like, LED screens in our dank pubs. But no, they're fine now. They have the tax shelters, and they also have a red hot real estate market. And as we all know, that is a ticket to nonstop and ever expanding wealth.
Nothing but fire economy. Just skip any kind of production whatsoever.
Yeah.
Obliterate like any kind of protection you might have for your ever expanding service sector. It's just all fire economy. Just real estate. You can. I mean, their rent crisis is as bad as ours.
Yeah.
Financialized capitalism.
And you pay that much to live in Dublin. It's basically a farm.
Financialized capitalism is so awesome that it invented global real estate bubbles somehow. Like, that's the most amazing shit I've ever
heard. It's pretty impressive.
That's
because
fucking incredible.
Well, because
that
people,
just defies any
people
reason.
Will like commute from Madrid to Dublin or something like that.
Because for a long, long time, it was absolutely unimpeachable received wisdom that there is no such thing as even within one country a single housing market, that there are only regional markets, and that there was you couldn't have like an entire country have a bubble or whatever. And they're like, fuck that, I'll see you that and create an entire world real estate market. Never done before.
You know, you think about it, it's so Irish to wake up late, sleep through industrialization, and then just show up on the job of the hyper-financialized age and be like, what? I was here. What are you talking about? I clocked in.
Look, I understand it, though.
God bless them.
Yeah.
They live right next to you and have a very deep, complicated relationship and inferiority complex and resentment of the UK. And the center of European finance capital is right there in London. They got that big pickle. You know, the big green pickle downtown, the Pickle Rick building.
British people love it when you call it that.
Yeah. And they look at that. They're like, fuck, I want one of them.
Yeah.
I want one of them in Dublin. And
well, they got the stiffy on the liffy, that big spike in the middle.
Yes.
Which is nice because you can never get lost in the 30 square feet of Dublin with that thing right in the middle.
Yeah.
I actually do love Dublin. It is literally a city full of the best people at the bar.
You walk around it and you honestly get the impression that all the buildings are made of gingerbread.
Oh, it's adorable.
Like you could just start nibbling on them at any time.
It's deeply adorable.
Yeah, it's very adorable.
And we make fun of them for everything, but they're lovely people.
They know how to
shockingly attractive. I mean, they age poorly. It's like they go to bed Cillian Murphy and wake up like Steve Bannon, just boom. but very cute, very charming. Always very, like, it is weird as a New Yorker to go to Dublin and be like, oh, people just, like, talk to you at the bar here.
Yeah, that's true. That was weird. That was a weird experience.
It's just, like, they're just genuinely benevolent and friendly. And then it reaches a certain hour of the night and they start shoving each other. It's a great time.
And they've been nice enough to help create this unprecedented tech behemoth now that was created, as we said, by the juice man. Steve Jobs,
oh,
Juice
God.
World. And I think that the question of like how could we have to think it's the same thing. Reason people insist that Donald Trump is a good businessman. It's like, yes, the Juice Man had to have been a genius, because otherwise then this whole thing is just a push button, you know, exploitation apparatus that any oaf, if they're in the right type, time and place, can take advantage of.
Someone's saying, what if we made it smaller?
Yeah. It's like, and I don't wonder if there's no buttons on it. And it's like, well, the button idea is nice, but the real place where the margins come in is creating the suicide net slave army to build the shit. That's where you actually make the money, not deciding that they shouldn't have a fucking button on it. But those things have to be the product of like a will, you know? It's feudal, and it's even deeper than that. It's like the original, you know, civilizations were the god emperor, where you know, no one who had a building that big and could command armies that large could be just a mere regular asshole.
Again, we don't feel, you know, admiration for these people. We feel like piety for them.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And of course, the Elon Musk thing is the ne plus ultra of that. This guy who not only is a genius, but will, according to a lot of his fans, literally save civilization. They have put all of their hopes for the survival of this species on the Pickle Rick billionaire. Like the Reddit meme guy, the Epic Bacon billionaire, is in their minds the only thing standing between us and annihilation. I mean, how do you even get out of the bed in the morning if you actually thought that? You think, wow, this climate change looks pretty scary. Might be a problem. And then you look at Elon Musk tweeting, you know, fucking links to Big Bang Theory episodes that he really likes. And you go, oh, we're going to be okay, folks. We're going to do it.
Well, it's the Kevin Phillips thing, that the deeper we go, the more we become a feudal society. And mm-hmm. this is perfect. Mm. It's perfect because we can't actually name anything that Elon Musk has ever done that we think is impressive, because you actually look at it, okay, he made an electric car, but it costs $489,000 and it's like constantly recalled and fucks up all the time. He like worked with some other asshole to like come up with a credit card processing system online, basically. And then everything else is purely theoretical, but because he is the anointed epic science guy, he's going to fix it. Same with Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs is like, he did invent a lot of shit. He invented the dumbest shit in the world, which is being a tech executive who takes LSD and is like, oh my God, I saw God and he taught me how to increase efficiency. But, you know, he mostly just benefited off the creations of other people and then was like, I invented this.
Well, the interesting thing about this, though, is like whatever on the geopolitical, you know, finance like landscape or whatever, is the EU, you know, that great, you know, advocate of workers, the European Union actually intervened and told Ireland, no, you have to make them pay taxes to you. And Ireland was like, no.
You don't understand. He really loves me.
It didn't come. Yeah, yeah. They're just a battered wife, yeah. That country. And I mean, there is some popular like opposition to this, obviously, among the Irish, but they are not in play in this at all. It's just an argument between the EU and like Irish liberal capitalists, while everyone else hopes that the like more sustainable form of capitalism wins.
Well, it's the perfect vehicle for neo-feudalism, because what has less accountability to any popular will than just completely made up money?
Mm.
What can you even do? You can't do shit. It doesn't really matter how many Irish people hate it.
Yeah.
They just, what are you going to do? We moved the decimal point along. We decided that this decimal point doesn't belong here. We entered a few things on the spreadsheet. Now you have, you know, $4 trillion parked here that is sort of liquid, but also sort of totally made up. You can borrow against it to make these buildings that look like they're a background in Halo 2 that are just going to crumble and are just filled with empty units.
Enjoy. It's just very sad.
You can't do anything about it.
There's no people's advocate in this. There's no institution of, you know, of the Irish working class that has literally any say in this whatsoever.
Well, I mean, that's all of us. I mean, we just don't have countervailing institutions. They're going running buck wild.
Yeah, but it's sadder when it happens to them than us, because they're nicer than us.
The thing, they won't be after enough yeah. time of this. You
they're going to be Americans in 15
yeah,
years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing about it is,
and the liberals, by the way, the Irish liberal capitalists would hear that and be like, yeah, we're going to be Americans in 15 years.
Oh, enjoy it, guys. It's going to be great for you. But
it's a little thing called a Golden Corral.
Yeah. But look forward to, you know, no longer having sex or drinking at all and just, you know, applying highlighter all night and taking Instagram photographs of yourself.
I will say, though, that it'll be nice to be able to go there and be able to get free refills on soda. That is a genuine American innovation that I do appreciate whenever I not have access to it.
The sequel to Angela.
This is the only thing you're anti-nanny state about.
What? No, it's just, I'm not. You go to a foreign country and you ask for a soda and they give you like a shot glass with no ice and it costs €4 or whatever and you don't get another one. It's just give me the big pebbly glass filled with Coke and then give me another one and then maybe one more for dessert.
When they become Americans, Angela's ashes becomes Angela's headphones, and it's just a tale of a bunch of like shitty adolescents being like, you stole my headphones, dude, you're so fucking gay. It's still 900,000 pages.
They develop a secondary economy just based on girls doing their eyebrows on YouTube.
People in the British Isles love,
oh they do,
oh my god, that is, that's going to be their fallback when the next financial crisis is going to be YouTubing eyebrow tutorials. They have some fucking
boomerangs. Oh my, just fucking boomerangs. What are they doing?
It's amazing. Like, yeah, it, it's like a racing stripe. I don't know what happened in the British. I don't know if it's like a ghost of colonialism or something, but
I have no idea. It is fascinating to like walk into like a London pub and see a bunch of girls like just completely Joan Crawforded out while drinking like watery warm lager. It's fucking boomerangs above their eyeballs. I don't know. And then just, they still do fake tan there. Like it's 2003. It's very weird.
Yeah. Europe's always a little behind, but they're not fully behind. They always pick like a couple things we used to have and then go forward.
They
with
just
the rest
keep
of
going with it.
Yeah. You know, just thinking how weird it would be if you were someone in Dublin who grew up, you were born in say like the 40s or 50s. The new fake money world economy is great because it makes the economy just a mystical thing that you cannot fathom or understand just more than has been. It's just this amazing force. It's this amazing force that you don't understand. That is why so many people like Trump, because if a guy just goes up there and is like, economy, jobs.
Well, I mean,
the system is so mercurial and fucking weird, and you are
it's a black box.
You are told your life is getting better, even though in many tangible ways it is worse than it has been in your lifetime. There are enough like outside bullshit indicators. Maybe a new glass of steel abomination going up. Maybe technically you are making more money, even if you don't pay attention to the CPI. The economy is so intangible to you now that if your resentments align the right way, or if you're Irish, your ambitions, your global ambitions, your inferiority complex work the right way, this mystical beast has enough benchmarks that don't actually mean anything that you can stand by it.
Well, that explains then why Ireland took to finance capitalism so well, because what is the traditional Irish get-rich-quick stream? It is you follow a rainbow and you find a tiny drunk man and you choke him until he gives you a magical pot of gold.
And that
that is the best.
Is Steve Jobs.
It's the best analogy to sort of, the mystical nature of modern finance capitalism. It is like getting a leprechaun. I mean, he just snaps his fingers and then, look, we've got some shitty high-rises now. This is amazing.
Well, that's what you get for creating a nation. Whatever. Cut this. Okay. I ran out
that's
of anti-Irish
That's what you get for
sentiment.
Creating a nation. You're on the Anarchist Radio podcast. Fuck nations.
Okay, so congrats first and foremost to the good folks of Ireland who helped the good folks at Apple become the world's history's most monstrous financial
enjoy the new
power.
Terror world that is coming.
But another guy.
Don't worry, we'll last forever. Yeah. Literally.
Another guy that we want to say shout out to is Big Baller Paul Manafort, who was. Everyone knew when he was originally charged with all of his shenanigans and tax avoidance that he was.
Shenanigans. I believe that was in the deposition.
Yeah. That he was a fan of basically laundering money through buying absurd items and just kind of like parking the money there. But what we found out this week in his trial is that the thing he really loved to buy was baller-ass suits. He bought over $1 million, $1.3 million on custom suits between 2010 and 2014. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what, not since Buzz Bissinger has there been someone who has figured out how to blow money on clothing away that way. And I mean, for me specifically, this is very hard because I honestly don't think that I have spent more than maybe $500 on clothing in my entire life. So this
is
just beyond.
Like, find your pants in the garbage can.
Well, I mean, Kroger's got fine clothing.
This is a general type of rich guy, though, that is very, like, almost tragic to me, I think. The guy, he just looks like any middle-aged guy you've ever seen, but he's just, he's incredibly vain, but knows he can't change. He's too old. He can't change like his shape or how
he'll
his
never
face
be
is.
A cool hot guy, no matter what he does. But so he goes all Imelda Marcos and buys these insane suits.
I mean, it's just, you can buy your way out of so much. You can buy your way out of pretty much every inconvenience. You can buy your way out of consequences. You can buy your way out of almost any feeling, but you know, if you're one of these guys, you really can't buy your way out of your own skin. But God, do they try.
Yeah, buy your way out of your own stupid skin and into a $15,000 ostrich skin. $15,000 ostrich skin jacket. I mean, I don't know how you would wear that, honestly. I mean, wouldn't you be
afraid? That couldn't be a suit, right? Because it's leather.
No, it's just a jacket. Yeah. It's a $15,000 jacket. And I honestly don't know how you dress like that.
I mean, he's just an impulse buyer.
Yeah, he probably wore it to like outings. You know, he had the suits that he would wear to like work or like an event that's like, oh, Mubudu Sese Seko's kid is being recircumcised. but he would wear the jacket to like a cool event. Yeah. Like, you know.
The ostrich jacket, I'm going to say.
We found
church? Church. Probably wore it to church.
No, I mean, for the stuff that Paul Manafort did, it's like, we cloned the last dodo and we're going to kill it.
Yeah, no. And he would wear it to.
I mean, by church, I mean like whatever, you know, shadowy place they all abuse children.
Right. The Catholic Church.
Yeah. He wore it to Comet Ping Pong. But the other thing that people say about this is that, well, this is basically a money laundering operation, is that because he had all of his money in foreign accounts.
I don't think they understand that laundering is not laundry. Like,
but I mean,
those are different.
The fact is that he had all this money in foreign accounts. And the thing about that money is you can't use it for most purchases. Like, you can't pay your mortgage with it. You can't pay credit cards or anything. The only thing you can do is find somebody who will take direct wire transfers and buy like luxury goods. And so the theory there is that
he
basically
literally had too much money. Like, too much money to even spend, is what you're saying.
Right. He had money he couldn't spend because it was hidden from the United States government. So he didn't declare it, but it was out of the country. So he couldn't access it. Because
that's a weird monkey's paw thing.
Yeah. It's like all this tantalizing money.
You can
have
all of this money, but you can only spend it on dumb shit.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. It's like a curse. It's like some sort of sequel to Brewster's Millions. It's like you have all this cash, but you can't do anything that anybody else does with money. You have to buy weird, exotic items and then like just have them in your house and just like, well, you know, it's a $15,000 jacket, but like, I guess I could put it on eBay or something. I could do a Craigslist ad and get somebody to
spend. See, now, if he was smart, he would do what all rednecks do, which is find the objects that are high value but depreciate the least, which are guns and guitars.
That
will always sell for the same amount of money.
That would be cool if he did that. But apparently it was all clothing. And it's like, how are you, unless
Look,
you're
I'm
like
on
literally
Poshmark,
lining.
He's losing money on that.
Yeah, you, no, he's definitely
the
losing money.
The resale is, you know, the depreciation is high on clothing for resale.
Yeah, and like nobody else on earth buys this shit. So it's, well, I mean, we know he wasn't very good at his job because he got owned as soon as anyone looked at him for more than a minute, which is really the thing to me that the one actual meaningful takeaway from the entire Russia whole shit is just how comically, horrifically corrupt everyone involved in Washington, D.C. politics is, to the degree that if any of them gets the slightest scrutiny from an investigative body, 5 million crimes are immediately revealed. Look at all of the people, including Democrats, who are now caught in the backlash of just the Manafort investigation, like fucking the Podestas and
former White House counsel for Obama, Craig Gregg.
Craig
Gregg. Like, first thing Manafort's going to get him for is birth certificate fraud. Sorry, dude, that's not your name.
Yeah, no one's,
no
named,
one's name.
No one is named Gregg Craig.
But it's like, yeah, I feel like now we're at the point in the Mueller investigation where it's Artie from Casino, where he's just bitching in his grocery store and just reveals every crime everyone in that room ever did. That's Manafort. And it just implicates everyone he's ever talked to. It's every lot. Like, I mean, I would say that like someone like Lanny Davis is probably like smarter than Manafort to the extent that he hides it a little bit better. Like
he still
Manafort
has a dog's name.
That's true. That's true. But Manafort,
like, he's as smart as a golden retriever.
Manafort's money laundering is just like comically incompetent. Like, I mean, I thought, to be fair, I thought a lot of the suit buying was money laundering, but it's like, no, bitch loves clothes. But the other money laundering is like he would launder it through like a rug store and label the payment like legal business. And it's like, got him, dude. No one's ever going to look into this.
Yeah,
but
man loves rugs.
You got to figure that Manafort is more the mean than the exception.
Oh, absolutely. And it's and it just shows you that, that this is not. And this, of course, makes you think even more about the Obama administration argument about why they couldn't prosecute anybody involved in the mortgage collapse, because, you know, hey, it would have been great if we could have found evidence, but there just wasn't any there wasn't a strong enough case. Mm. And it's like, I'm sorry, any of these guys gets one agent spending an afternoon looking at their books.
Looking at all, even for a second?
Yeah. Like the criminality is out in the open, and it continues because it is not considered criminality. It's not considered a priority. It's considered the lubricant for the how the system works. So it will never be ended. And if you want to talk about like stopping Russian nefarious foreign intervention in politics, like don't have this fucking class of absolute grifters that close to the levers of power in the first place. Like, and maybe at the very least investigate these kind of crimes and have a government like prioritizing it. And also, of course, best of all, not having people with this much criminal amount of money in the first place to splash all over the political system. That's the actual fucking like agenda item, not relaunching the Cold War.
Well, America doesn't want to ever be told to get its own house in order, and they never will. And that's kind of it.
Yeah. We rule.
Yeah.
We always will rule.
If anything goes wrong, it's because someone else did it. It has nothing to do with their own shortcomings. I mean, like, you realize when you pay too much attention to the Democratic Party as a leftist, you become like a bootstraps personal responsibility guy. Because you're like, you fucked this up. This is your fault. Take some responsibility. And they never will.
Oh, yeah. After like 2 years of this following this fucking nightmare, I just feel like a boomer now. I feel like a bitter
totally.
Boomer
yeah.
all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone is the problem but me.
Yeah. Well, no, America, I mean, America is just it's a reality show contestant. You know, it's the guy who didn't come here to make friends and is sick of everybody else's drama. That's America in general. Okay, so there's one more guy we want to say congratulations to today. And I think this is, our favorite of the three we've talked about, and a guy who we all miss a great deal and think and have a tremendous amount of respect for, and that is former President Barack Obama, who turned the magical number of 57 years old and states today.
Another Obama gaffe. Like, you'd think he would just skip this year to not remind people.
Yeah.
Again.
I'm 58. let's not talk about 57 ever again.
He's going to obungle this birthday, I tell you what.
Yeah. He's going to have the pie, or he's going to have a cake with 57 states on it.
If you cut the limo in half and count how many seats, that's how old he is.
Let me be clear. I'm going to be wearing my birthday suit all day. So in honor of Barack Obama's 57th birthday, the president who basically didn't exist at this point, the disappearing president, I think the least consequential two-term president ever, maybe?
Leonard Nimoy in The Simpsons.
Yes. I'm trying to think of a two-term president who had less of a lasting impact on American politics than Barack Obama.
Easy, Benjamin Franklin.
because he like none of his accomplishments have stood the test of time. His attempt to heal the divide in America's political dialogue, his attempt to rise above partisanship, none of it has left a mark on any of the political institutions or the political discourse. It's like he never existed. It's breathtaking, really.
Again, no one is mad at him.
No, I mean, I guess
we are, but I mean, no one is mad at him. Like, they're just like, oh, we miss you.
Well, yeah, because all politics is just sort of like mysticism now. And the reason you would miss Obama is you miss the feeling. You miss the feeling of not having to worry, which, you know, I understand. I did feel better then. Oh, my God. Unquestionably, the culture was better. I didn't have to respect Seth Meyers. I didn't have to see fucking 5 billion assholes from the FBI.
Oh, God.
Every day and respect. Like, it was better. It felt better. Most of the things that suck were the same, but it was, you know, better. But, you know, the people who are throwing their bodies on the pyre for Obama. Obama come back. Obama come back. They just want the feeling back. And that's it. And Obama, he can't really show up them. I saw a tweet today, the iteration of which I've seen many times, where it's like, we love you, Obama, please help us. It's like, he was literally president and this happened.
Yeah.
He was, what do you think he was doing before? This is how he thought he was helping.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, what is he going to say? What can he say without realizing, because Obama's not an idiot, what can he say without realizing that he completely failed?
Yeah.
So he's got to spend the rest of his life, you know, cloning jellyfish with Richard Branson. You know, going, you know,
just water skiing with naked models on his back.
But that's true, because his the crux of his conception of politics and of his role in politics was as the guy who would give a speech. I mean, that really is true. Like, and that is why the right wing went so crazy about the teleprompter thing, because they thought that, well, if you can take his rhetorical ability and reduce it to reading off of a script, then you have reduced him as a figure, because everyone understood him as this rhetorical figure. He had those, like, his career was propelled at every point by an amazing speech at a moment. The first one, of course, was the 2004 DNC keynote. And then after Reverend Wright thing, remember, there was the Reverend Wright thing during the 2008 campaign, and everyone freaked out. And they're like, oh, my God, this anti-white racist was his guy. He's a crazy black nationalist. What are we going to do? And he, like, went into seclusion, right? And he sat in his study, and he spent the night writing by hand this speech about race that he delivered in Philadelphia.
God, he was so West Wing.
It was the most West Wing thing in recent American political history, because it worked.
Oh, my God. He was a liberal poster.
Yeah.
He was a poster. He's like, you know what? We're going to fight this.
Yeah.
By what? Posting.
He posted. And the thing is, it worked. I mean, you could argue it wouldn't have mattered anyway, but in terms of the way people remember that campaign, he gave that speech about race, and everyone stopped and thought, wow, hold on a minute. And they forgave him for Reverend Wright, and he went on to win. And it was, and like, that's how he thinks of it. Cause, and if he were to come out and try to do a speech again, you know, like a third act kind of thing, like Roy Hobbs, you know, in The Natural, it would, instead of, he knows in his heart, I think, because how could he not? Donald Trump is president, that it would not be the movie ending of The Natural that everybody remembers, where he hits the home run that smashes the light grid. It would be the ending in the book where he fucking strikes out and then dies, because he would give the speech, nothing would happen, and then the entire premise of his political career would just crumble in front of him.
Yeah, but it's not just the speech thing. I think people did like the speeches. They made them feel good or whatever. And he was a pretty good orator, but you have to realize the bar had been set so low.
Oh, yeah.
So low.
And that's going to help him in the long run, because look at where he is. Like, look at the sandwich he's going to be in.
Everything is measured comparatively.
Look at the sandwich of presidents that Obama is going to be between.
Yeah.
The murder cowboy and then Trump. It's like, how is he not going to look good and elevated and presidential compared to them?
Right.
Because people
are wholly reactive.
Yeah.
You know, it's all just a matter of, like, this is so much less embarrassing than the previous president.
Yeah, but I do like that in his retirement, he realizes his sort of impotence, and I give him credit for that, because for most of his presidency, he seemed to be genuinely delusional. And if you look at the memoirs of a lot of people, there's a new book out by one of his assistants that talks about how during the showdown for the debt ceiling showdown after the Tea Party election in 2010, they sat down with the Republicans. This is the thing that ended up with all the awful shit like sequestration and all that. And it talks about how this is after the Tea Party election. This is after McConnell said we want to deny him a third term. This is after the 2010 midterms lead up was just a bunch of hooting psychopaths with tea bags hanging from their fucking earlobes, holding brown bus muskets and pointing them at congressmen who are trying to give them Obamacare. They sat down, and the quote was, "We are going into these negotiations, believing the best intentions of our other number." Like, that's what they were saying in 2011. They were saying, "We gotta assume that these guys are operating in good faith." So his entire presidency was based on delusion. But I think the Trump thing, for most, like it did for a lot of us, kind of woke him up, because he has decided to just spend the rest of his life just easing into global 0.1% debauchery. just like go fuck it. Like the first thing he did was he went parasailing with Richard Branson. Now he's got a fucking Netflix deal to do a bunch of movies so he can hang out in Hollywood and like, and you know,
he signed to FaZe. FaZe Gaming Clan.
Yeah.
He's just Ninja. You're a bitch.
Spawn campers, you didn't build that.
I like the idea of him playing with the Pod Save America guys, just berating them for sucking at a game he also sucks at.
God, they'd love that.
John, build, God damn it. I'm never going to win a squad game with you. You're right, sir.
They would just be throwing like glasses on the floor and taking off their clothes and rolling in it.
Oh, let me be clear. I'm a head shotter.
Congrats to him on getting by scot-free.
Yeah. He got away with it. He's now doing what he always wanted to do, which was ascend to the global elite, which he now is unquestionably. He gets to hang out with all of the global monsters and go to Davos every time he wants to and hang out now even with the Hollywood guys. He's done it. He broke in. So congratulations to him on that. He was a baller. He never stopped grinding, and I respect him for that. Had to grind for this view, but. The plebes, the sad, bereft liberals who have left in his wake and have to live not in the global money cloud that he does, but in America governed by Donald Trump and the psychotic Republican Party, they're a little more upset. They're a little more sad. They're wistful, and they wish that Obama was back. And they're expressing that desire in a lot of weird ways. The funniest one, in my opinion, is a new book that is tearing up the Amazon charts called Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery. The first of what is promising to be an Obama-Biden mystery series.
I wanted it to be a choose-your-own-adventure.
That would have been cool, and that would have really... Or a coloring book.
Yeah.
It's written by Andrew Schaefer, and the description is as such. Vice President Joe Biden and President Barack Obama team up in this high-stakes thriller that combines a mystery worthy of Watson and Holmes with the laugh-out-loud romantic chemistry of Lethal Weapon's Murtaugh and Riggs.
Wait, this is slash fic.
Basically, yes. With I think you have to like pay extra for the sex scenes. Vice President Joe Biden is fresh out of the Obama White House and feeling adrift when his favorite railroad conductor dies in a suspicious accident, leaving behind an ailing wife and a trail of clues. To unravel the mystery, Amtrak Joe reteams with the only man he's ever fully trusted, the 44th president of the United States.
Amtrak Joe and the chase from Me Too.
Together, they'll plumb the darkest corners of Delaware, traveling from cheap motels to biker bars and beyond as they uncover the sinister forces advancing America's opioid epidemic.
You mean they're like own party's donors, right?
Yeah.
You mean...
Yeah, presumably
they... all the superdelegates.
Yeah, presumably Jesus the end. Christ. They pull the mask off of the monster's face, and it's a Pritzker or something. Part noir thriller and part bromance. Second time they mentioned the bromance. So yeah, they're pushing the slash fic.
I love
really
the word
hard.
Bromance. It's just another word for male-male friendship for people who have never experienced it.
Yeah.
Just everything has to have a special little word. It's bromance. I never saw male friendship except for in a movie where Seth Rogen is like, oh, I want to smoke weed. And James Franco said, what about Star Wars? Everything has to have a cute little pet name.
Yeah, it has
we're
to
have children now.
Yeah.
It has to be branded.
I mean, we're
content.
Literally reading like the Hardy Boys versions of politics. So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we all.
All children.
All our interactions and all of our dynamics have to be branded in a specific way so that we can talk to them about them in a shorthand and maybe have a t-shirt or something, or certainly a hashtag. Part noir thriller and part bromance, Hope Never Dies is essentially the first published work of Obama-Biden fiction. And a cathartic,
there's no way, first of all.
And a,
no, yeah.
And a cathartic read for anyone distressed by the current state of affairs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're just admitting. They're just like, eat the lotus. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's a pacifier for you, you little stupid fucking baby.
Yes. So there's also on Amazon, there's
they got reviews.
There's an inter. Well, there are reviews. We'll take a look at those. But first, there's an interview with the author, Andrew Schaefer. And they ask him, where did the idea for Hope Never Dies come from? The first time I saw Joe Biden in his Ray-Ban aviators, I thought, that guy's an action hero. The 80-year-old man,
I mean,
who's had seven brain hemorrhages.
He does seem too old for this shit.
Yeah. He's only had like 8 brain hemorrhages. The sunglasses, the suit, the dead serious stare. You think you're looking
Nothing
at James
about
Bond.
Him is serious.
Have you seen anyone wear sunglasses before? I love how fucking dumb people are. Every old person wears sunglasses because they have cataracts. Because the sun will kill them. Like, fucking Jesus. Hey, it looks like fucking Tom Cruise in Mission James Bond. Oh, my fucking God.
Also, this rubs entirely against, like, the kind of onion manifestation.
Well,
of,
no, that's
of
coming up here.
Biden.
See, this guy, this is why this guy is an
that's
artist.
That's a really weird onion manifestation that he's, like, a sleazy sex creep. Really character.
No, they.
I mean, I maintain here that Biden is actually like the perfect example of the sort of person who you would like to be your next door neighbor, but you don't want in charge of anything ever. Not even like, you know, a block cleanup committee.
No, he's not that. He's not like goofy or wacky or anyway. He's a fucking complete scumbag who's totally beholden to Delaware, aka Little Ireland. This just flat plane of nothingness that is a tax haven for fucking everything. He's one of the most cynical people ever. He's a fucking architect of the drug war. He's a piece of shit.
He is actually, the Biden crime bill is responsible for, I mean, a huge amount of incarceration.
That's the best thing that ever happened to him. Yeah. He's like everyone's crazy uncle, and not just, you know, Chris Dodd.
No,
but with
that's
7%
the thing,
more
is that,
charisma.
Is that uncle is that guy, but it's just like he's nice to you and gives you $20, so you can forget about
him.
Well, you're saying, oh, it goes against the onion thing, but no, he's taking that into consideration. It's a synthesis. The sunglasses, the suit, the dead serious stare, you think you're looking at James Bond, then he opens his mouth and sticks his foot in it, and you realize he's closer to Leslie Nielsen. I toyed with the idea of a solo Joe Biden novel for years, but it never went anywhere. For years. Can you imagine?
I wish you toyed with a gun.
Toiling in your your garret.
He's sitting in the dark in front of an old-timey typewriter. There's just a pile of cigarette butts. His hands are ripping his hair out. Why won't it work? Yeah. It's there, but I can't make it work.
It's just so freaking epic.
Yeah. What should he quote? Should he quote "Whoop, there it is," or "Who let the dogs out"? I can't pick.
No, that's the thing. Everyone fucking made fun of Mitt Romney for "Who let the dogs out," and it's like, that's not really different from anything Joe Biden has ever
absolutely.
Done. Ever.
Joe Biden does that all the time.
When the Obama Biden bromance memes began circulating on the internet during their final months
fuck
of in office,
you. They're both robots.
I dusted off the idea.
People don't have soul.
I dusted off the idea of doing a Joe Biden send up and tweaked it, namely to add President Obama as the Sherlock to Joe's Watson. Was it a challenge?
That's someone who's read those books, definitely.
100% awesome.
Was it a challenge to write action scenes for a protagonist who is 75 years old? Surprisingly not. Joe Biden is in fantastic shape. I had to hobble him with a bum knee just to make things competitive between him and the bad guys. Do you have a particular favorite Bidenism that you wrote? Pie a la mode. Hold the pie. So that's the book.
You ever feel like, you know, 9-Gag kind of won the culture war?
I know,
secretly, everything's supposed to be like woke and like progressive and self-affirming yet radical now. But it just feels like everything is just freaking epic all the time. Just 100% epic.
When you see about the ways you're supposedly, the woke ways you're supposedly allowed to insult people, like you realize that like they definitely dominated that sphere as well.
Oh my God. Yeah, just the only non-ableist way to insult someone is like, you fuck shitting shit waffle.
Yeah, but
like,
then,
awesome.
You know, some people have ostomy bags, Felix, so
okay. Yeah,
there's one review I wanted to read about this by a verified purchaser. I was torn between 4 and 5 stars because honestly, this isn't the best book ever written or even in my top 100. As far as the detective stuff.
Look at that guy bragging that he's read over 100 books.
As far as the detective stuff
goes.
The
entire Babysitter's Club series.
The plot is minor and by the numbers. However, this may be the best book ever narrated by a fictional Joe Biden. So there's that. Also,
epic.
Given the times we live in, I really needed to read this book about two totally decent humans who love each other and are brave and true and get things done.
Why
they got so
people,
much done. Look who's president now.
Why don't these people do what all of those like British soldiers did after they were all fucked up from World War I and go to Asia and get an opium habit?
Yeah, no, they can't
like,
even.
Just if you're going to drop out, man.
They dropped out, but they never left.
They're just
still around.
Yeah,
still,
because now there's the 21st century option of dropping out is just going online. that just being extremely online. You don't need to go to Shanghai and find an opium den. You can just log on and never log off.
No.
It's opium bliss. Den.
Man, you ever feel like nothing's ever going to get better and all you can do is just like singularly pursue the habit of getting it as good at video games as you possibly can? Have you ever felt that way? I'm pretty sure this is a universal feeling.
I've had that, but not video games specifically. Tweeting, maybe. So
yeah, Matt's more into traditional games. He's like, I'm going to compete in tic-tac-toe.
it's a solved game. You can't get good at that.
It would be funny to be like the ninja of tic-tac-toe or Jax.
Jax, well, that Jax
is hard.
Jax is hard. Yeah. That requires coordination. Yeah.
If you're too aggressive about it, you can hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Being the top-ranked tetherball player in the world.
Isn't that just like the tallest person playing tetherball?
Yeah.
You would think. I bet there's a Muggsy Bogues tetherball.
So to end, I wanted to read a little bit from the beginning of the Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery. One. The night this all started, I was in a black Irish mood.
That's
okay. That's nothing we have said is even half as offensive to the Irish as that line. So if you're going to get mad at us Irish listeners, find Andrew Schaefer instead.
I was in a black Irish mood. What?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that. What does he mean? He's like pissed? Does he mean he's saying the N-word? Like, what does it mean?
It means he's thinking about all the times his ancestors were slaves.
Oh, right.
And that was before I learned my friend was dead. I was sitting at my computer, and I'd stumbled across one of those so-called paparazzi videos. Yeah, this is like while looking for crush.
Upskirts.
Crush and upskirts. It opened with a wide shot of Cape Town's fabled Table Mountain. The camera panned down to the white-capped waves in the harbor. An impossibly long speedboat entered the frame, cutting through the surf like a buttered bullet. A parasailer trailed behind the boat, high in the sky, tethered to the stern by a thin rope. The camera zoomed in on the daredevil's face, and I saw that my old friend Barack Obama was having the time of his life.
My old buddy.
Is the like first line of dialogue, "Hello, Barack Obama, former president of the United States. I'm your friend, Joe Biden, former vice president of the United States."
I will say that the one thing that this book gets right that isn't delusional, that is, I think, an accurate insight into the character of Joe Biden, is that he might be a lizard puppet of the military industrial complex and of the credit card companies. But he genuinely, his whole life, clearly wanted to have a cool black friend. And getting to be friends with Obama clearly is like the highlight of his life.
He watched Lethal Weapon movies every night.
No, he always wanted a cool black guy to be friends with him. Like that's the one thing that actually seems genuine about him. And one of the ways you can know that for sure is that Obama was the guy who sat him down in 2016 when he saw Hillary limping through the primaries and thought for a minute, I could get in here and actually win. Obama's the guy who sat him down and said, "Don't run, Joe." And it worked because he clearly has that puppy dog admiration for Obama. So kudos to Schaefer for getting just the pathetic supplicant part of Biden's relationship with that guy. Because he could have won.
He would have won. He absolutely would. As much as I don't like him, he would have won, and he would have won because he wouldn't have made all the fucking boneheaded, too clever by half mistakes.
No, of course. He would have run an old-fashioned
Hillary's team of samurais. Also, he's like the least racist guy in Delaware.
Yeah. he would have run a boiled meat and potatoes Irish campaign, good old-fashioned ward healers going, walking around on the blocks, and he would have won. It would have been easy. I don't know if he could have beat Hillary in the primary, but it's possible.
He's definitely more likable than Hillary.
Oh, a million times. And Obama, I mean, we want to talk about his manifest incompetencies and crimes, like, and we've said this before, but clearing the fucking deck for Hillary in 2016.
No,
one of the greatest acts of political malpractice in history.
No one loves the people that hates him like Barack Obama. He's like Jesus Christ. Just if he didn't do anything for the people that liked him.
Yeah.
He just like he all the shit.
He turns the other cheek in the back of a limo.
Yeah. All the things the Hillary people did to him in 2007 and 2008. He's just like, no, only she can be president. Yep. Just fucking amazing, man.
Because doing that to him reflects well on him. It means that he's above pettiness and he's a good person.
Remember when you were super racist to me? Well, no hard feelings.
Yeah. Remember when you had that picture of me wearing the turban and the hammer pants and put that out into the press? It's okay.
It's amazing. It's amazing, right? How little memory we have that, like, Hillary did run, like, you know, pretty much like a boring Strasserist ticket.
She ran the campaign.
None of the actual social democracy, though.
Just being like, yeah, in 08, yeah, she would like go to some steel mill and be like, I'm not going to let them make any more rap.
Rappers are taking away all the jobs.
Yeah, 8 years later, clear the deck for her, and she's like, everyone's racist but me. Yeah. Awesome, dude.
Amazing.
And the guy who cleared the deck for her was the guy that her people race agitated against.
Yeah, it's breathtaking.
It rules, dude. It rules. No one's ever going to talk about it. No one mentions it.
Yeah.
It's just fucking awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. You got to laugh.
Anything at all.
Yeah. And of course, like the sharps, you know, the people on who think that they have inside insight will kind of argue with that and say, no, he didn't do it because he's smug and because he wanted to feel like he was, you know, he was big hearted or whatever. He did it because he needed to keep the Clintons on his side and he didn't want them outside the White House, like sowing dissent. And it's like, one, that didn't even work. She was fucking leaking the whole time she was Secretary of State and her people were bitching about him the entire time. And also, how do you not recognize after she loses that gimme race that she's a spent force in American politics and not someone you had to worry about?
It's like, you know, it's not nearly as bad as letting the bankers off the hook, but we could have been done with the Clintons forever.
Oh, God.
And he's like, no, I'm infinitely renewing this series.
Yeah.
You have to watch the Clinton show forever.
He dragged one of Peter Thiel's blood boys into the room and just squeezed her full of teenage blood to keep her pumping. Just long enough to eat shit for fucking Donald Trump.
Oh, my God.
All right. So this is he's looking at this paparazzi video of his buddy having the time of his life. Unencumbered by the deadweight loser vice president, WW44 was on the vacation to end all vacations, windsurfing on Richard Branson's private island, kayaking with Justin Trudeau, base jumping in Hong Kong with Bradley Cooper. Barack wasn't simply tempting the fates. He was daring them. And why not? If he could survive 8 long years as the first black U.S. president, he could survive anything. Not that I was worried about him. I was done getting all worked up over Barack Obama.
Is this book written for readers who don't know who Obama is? Because every line is like, being that he was the 45th president of the United States, you know, as a former senator from Illinois.
I forced myself to look away from the computer. I turned to face the dartboard on the back hall of my office. It was an old Christmas gift from my daughter. I'd kept it in storage for many years, but now I finally had some free time on my hands. Maybe too much free time. One call, I said to my faithful companion, Champ. Is that too much to ask?
That's his slave.
Yeah.
It's not a dog.
The dog glanced up with indifference. He'd heard it all before. Just one phone call, I said. In a snap of the wrist, I sent the dart sailing across the room. It hit its mark right between Bradley Cooper's piercing blue eyes. 8 years. I plucked the darts from the shredded magazine cover taped to the board, and not even a gosh darn postcard. Barack even had the gall to tell People magazine that we still went golfing together on occasion.
First of all, Biden would not say gosh darn.
No.
He would say the N-word.
Also, Obama would have eaten Champ by now. To save face, I repeated the lie. The truth was, there hadn't been any golf outings, no late night texting, not even a friendly poke on Facebook. I watched the skies for smoke signals. I read the New York Times, dissecting headlines, looking for clues he might have left me. Nothing. Sometimes late at night after Jill was sound asleep, I scrolled through the old text messages Barack and I had exchanged a lifetime ago. It was an exercise in futility. If I kept picking at the wound, it was never going to heal. In the darkness outside my office window, I glimpsed a tiny flickering light. I turned off my desk.
Oh, my God. This is a Taylor Swift song.
Yeah, I can't really make fun of this guy anymore. He's clearly, like, going through something as he's writing this. Like,
he's had a real breakup, and the only way he could process it is by turning it into a tale of scorn between former president and vice president. I turned off my desk lamp to get a better look, and there it was again, a pinprick of orange light, like a firefly or a cigarette. A prowler? Maybe. Only one way to find out. Let's go, Champ. The dog's ears perked up. I spun the dial in the small closet safe. There were two things inside, my Medal of Freedom and my Sig Sauer pistol.
Cool.
I slipped the pistol into the waistband at the small of my back, then tucked my polo shirt over it. I called out to my wife, "I'm letting Champ out." She didn't answer back. I could hear the TV playing in our bedroom. Law and Order. I should have been watching with her. Instead, I opened the back door. As soon as I did, Champ raced across the lawn and tore off into the woods. The motion light over the back porch should have kicked on, but the bulb was burnt out. Old bulbs were meant to burn out. The moon.
What
was,
does that mean?
It's foreshadowing. The character Joe Biden will one day die of old age.
I think he's saying that he's conveying that Joe Biden is filled with the sense that he is past his usefulness and is sort of just waiting to die. But I feel that very shortly, meaning will come back into his life. The moon was full enough to light up the backyard. Our 7,000 square foot lake house sat on 4 acres of property.
This asshole is bragging about his real estate during his own internal monologue.
The property values had only gone up every year over the past five. Late at night, it was impossible to imagine you were all alone in the world. Tonight, however, I wasn't alone. Ahead in the woods was this pinprick of light, and now I smelled a tobacco, a familiar brand, Marlboro Reds. Don't get your hopes up, I told myself. Hope is just a four-letter word. I crossed the yard, walking to the spot where Champ had disappeared into the trees. At the edge of the clearing, I spied a vertically challenged man in a dark gray suit and matching tie. He had short, spiky hair, like he'd recently been discharged from the Marines and was letting it grow out. An earpiece disappeared into his collar. Secret Service. My heart was beating faster than a dog licking a dish. My own security detail had been...
This guy loves dogs.
Yeah, holy shit.
He had been... My own security detail had been dismissed several weeks earlier. Vice presidents were granted 6 months of protection following their time in office and not a day more unless they were extenuating circumstances. Nice night for a walk, I said. Secret Service nodded towards the woods, showing me the way. I ducked under a low-hanging branch and kept walking. The heavy foliage overhead diffused the moonlight. I had to tread carefully to avoid the underbrush. The smell of burning tobacco grew stronger. I called to Champ. In response, I heard flint striking steel, a lighter close by. I swiveled around. There, to my left, by the big oak, 10 paces away, a man crouched low, scratching Champ behind the ears. German shepherds don't talk to strangers, but this man was no stranger. He rose to his feet, a slim figure in his black hand-tailored suit. His white dress shirt was unbuttoned at the neck. He took a long drag off his cigarette and exhaled smoke with leisure. Barack Obama was never in a hurry.
This is 50 Shades for people who read Daily Kos. This is the saddest fucking thing.
I can't even really make fun of this. I mean, it's just like, oh man, it just, you hate to see it. That's all I can say. You just hate to see it.
It's a goddamn shame.
What happened to this poor man?
Yeah.
What happened to everybody?
Yeah.
That there is seriously a huge demand for this book. Like, tons of people bought this.
You know what?
This book is going to sell more than our book. Like, you know that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, definitely.
No question. Yeah, but.
Hate to see it.
You hate to see it, but nobody has any other ideas. All they can think of is bringing
opium.
Obama back.
Just fucking be an adult. Be a grown-ass adult and develop a fucking opium habit.
Everyone.
Okay.
You know, boomers, libs, conservatives, Maoists, Demsox, us, me, my uncles, whoever. Just let's all do it. This isn't making things any better. This isn't doing anything.
Folks, we're taking the black pill today, so...
This is just dragging you down. How do you go on? You read that. You like, that's a book that makes you feel good. You read that where it's like Obama and Biden are epic together, and then you turn on the news and...
It's a political waifu.
You know, the guy who's president is, you know, restarting his feud with Rosie O'Donnell. They're going to pass another tax bill. They're going to do a war with Iran and he's going to win a second term. Do you just go back to that book? Yeah, you do. Oh, my God. This is just grim. This is fucking grim. You have no actual, like, plan for how things are going to get better. It's just like, I just want another president that feels epic.
What does he
do?
What is his deal?
What, Obama?
No, the author.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Is this some kind of elaborate prank by Michelle Houellebecq? Because I wouldn't. I mean, in terms of describing alienation.
Yeah. No, my suspicion is...
He's not a terrible writer.
My suspicion of this is that he's just
bad.
A guy who saw a market.
Yeah, but not terrible.
It says he's written over a dozen books. He writes parody books.
Okay.
Yeah.
50 Shames of Earl Grey. The Day of the Donald, Trump Trumps America. Mm. How to Survive a Sharknado.
Hello, Epic Department.
This isn't a person. This is an algorithm.
Yeah. Oh, here's a good one. Catsby, a parody. It's the Great Gatsby, but it's a
this
cat.
This is an algorithm.
Oh, I thought it was Nanette for cats.
Yeah. This is the toast became sentient.
Yes.
This is, yeah.
No, this is those algorithms that make the YouTube videos where Elsa gets beheaded by the Joker spit this out for sure.
Cool. This is Trumpier art.
This is people said, oh, Trump is going to make things art more good. It's going to be like the it's going to be like Reagan with punk and stuff. And it's like, no, the internet's here. The internet has created this awful monoculture of weird normie irony that basically has destroyed everything.
Yeah, you wanted dead Kennedys, Terminator, Predator. You got Guardians of the Galaxy 7. You got Scorpion, the double album that Drake made about his secret son in 2 days that has 37 tracks so he can make the most money possible off of streaming. You got this.
Yeah. And if you really want to get gritty and dark, you can always go to the DC Cinematic Universe. If yeah. Marvel's too frothy for
you can see two men penetrate each other in combat. Yeah. You know, actually, God bless Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder is like the only director of these movies now that we have left who isn't an AI. He's a psycho, but like at least he isn't an AI.
Yeah. He's not algorithmically producing things.
Oh, my God.
Well, there you go, everyone. Good luck.
Yeah. Have a good one. Try to.
So... that's the show. I think what we can say is that yes, things are terrible and only going to get worse and there's no relief in sight. But we somehow, the three of us, managed to not get into a caper that destroyed the recording equipment or burned Amber's apartment down.
What if you guys write...
I'm proud of us.
Yeah.
What if so plucky listener writes a thriller about us trying to record a show together?
It would just be that I Love Lucy where her and Ethel got like a job at the candy factory.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I would love if I worked at a candy factory.
Oh, well,
let's do it.
I want to get hit on a head with a mallet until I'm like a simpleton from the 50s.
Yeah. let's all have wacky adventures at a chocolate factory like Jeffrey Dahmer did. All right, folks. I'm proud of us. I think we did okay.
We did it.
But we promise
Dad
will be back. We swear. He'll be back to get us back in the line.
No. Mom will be back. This is like when Dad was in charge and just heats up Chef Boyardee rabbit for you.
Well, no one was in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is like when they
are latchkey kids.
Exactly.
Right now.
They gambled to leave you home while they like go to the supper club or something.
Ooh, I actually think this is the Breakfast Club.
Ooh.
Does
that make
weed.
Will the Stern the principal guy
that points weird? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's time for us to refill our parents' booze bottles with water to get them back to the level they were when they left.
They'll
so they
never
don't know. They'll never know. All right. Bye, folks.
Bye.
See ya.